Welcome to Crane Talk Podcast, a podcast about what's going on in the world of crane, rigging, and heavy construction from the Coverica Global Construction Team. I'm your host for today, Leif Hurst, and I'm joined by experts Ron Thompson and Gene Greiner from Dallas, Texas. Guys, how are we doing this morning?
I'm doing awesome, man. I got an extra kick of my giddy up. Got up this morning, anxious to get over here and get this podcast going.
There you go. Gene, what about you?
Feeling great.
Feeling great. How's the tribe doing this morning?
Tribe is great. Although one of them had their tonsils out yesterday. So we've been battling that. Lots of ice cream, slushes, popsicles. I may have had one for breakfast. So,
hey, that's all right. Yeah. And if we ever mention the tribe, by the way, Gene, you've got triplet boys. How old are they?
The boys are 9. And then we have a daughter. She's 5. So hands are full for sure.
It's a full house. And Ron, you're empty nester. How's that world going?
We're empty and then became non-empty. My wife's parents moved in with us about 2 years ago. Yesterday was the birth of my grandson.
Oh, congratulations.
Thank you. Second grandchild. So we'll have 3-day-old and 96-year-olds in our house.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, across the spectrum.
Well, this is our first episode, and we just wanted to take a moment and kind of get to know you guys and what we're going to be talking about on the podcast, just kind of moving forward. We've got a wealth of knowledge in the room about cranes, rigging, heavy construction, tilt wall construction, concrete pumping, heavy hauling. It's almost like if it requires diesel gas, you guys know a thing or two about it. So I'm just going to jump into it real quick. I mean, let's hear y'all's story. I mean, how'd you get started in the crane world? Ron, we'll start with you.
Well, 1997, I worked for a large insurance company. My assistant went to work for a large crane broker here in the U.S., and she called me over and says, hey, do you want to come over here and sell cranes? And I thought, well, is it the long-legged big bird with a beak? I had no idea what a construction crane was. So in 97, I made the jump over to the large insurance crane broker. Started there. First day, brought me in 10 files and said, call people in California, New York, and you're off and running. So that's the way I got into it.
Very cool. Gene, what about you?
Had a background in construction as a project manager, and in 2008, when the economy took a nosedive, our projects dried up, and time was running out on that opportunity. So I loved the construction side of things, but I had family and friends in the insurance industry. The degree from college was in finance and risk management. So I transitioned out of construction into insurance, obviously emphasizing on the heavy construction side of things. And so met Ron and met the team. This was almost 15 years ago. So joined up and haven't looked back. So yeah, that was a kind of a economy-driven decision back in 2008. But I'm glad it worked out that way. So.
Yeah, and we're seeing similar things that we saw in 2008. I think this is probably a little bit more interest rate bearing, but I mean, our world in Dallas or Texas specifically seems to be a little bit more insulated from it. You know, things are. I'm still seeing buildings going up. I cross a bridge every day, and I see about 19 of y'all's cranes floating in the water on barges. I know Gene and I actually we live a neighborhood apart from each other, so we always. We always call it the bubble. But are we seeing that in the rest of the country, that same kind of boom that we're having here in Texas?
You know, Texas is unique, leads the nation in warehouse construction. You put warehouse tilt walls up by cranes. Texas, we're in a very special spot. But I think with the economy and the interest rates, I think are ticking up. You're having to slow down. Florida's busy. Texas busy. Tennessee, Nashville, Tennessee is on fire. Yeah, if you go along that southeastern coastline, it's real busy. Utilization is up. Tower cranes and the mobile cranes. So, yeah, we're unique in Texas, but we have not seen the slowdown that we probably will with interest rates ticking up, projects being delayed a little bit.
Well, let's get general to start with. I mean, what's been, and by the way, when I say general, we may go down to grass blades, but let's just see where this takes us. What's been on your mind lately, just in the industry? What's going on right now?
In our industry, at least, you know, with crane and rigging and insuring them, we've had quite a bit of reinsurance, capacity issues. Our team seems to be working daily to help our customer base with getting the amount of insurance they need to comply with their contractual requirements. This has all begun really in mid-2023. It's been a tough couple of months, honestly, in the insurance marketplace. But finding creative ways to find the extra, you know, several million dollars of insurance limit has been kind of the name of the game right now, as new potential customers are calling us about, because they're having problems wherever they might be insured. Current customers, you know, talking through that with those guys. It's just a hard market. I mean, I've been in it for 15 years, as I said earlier, Ron, longer, but I don't know if I've seen this in my career. Ron may have, so.
Well, in 2001, we had something called 9/11. Froze the reinsurance markets for about 6 months. You couldn't find reinsurance. 2008, we had to slow down the economy. There was another tight market. But outside of that, you go back to the mid-80s. Mid-80s were really tough, kind of telling you how long I've been in the business. But this is very unique, and I think it's a post-COVID thing. Social inflation's up. We have thermonuclear verdicts from lawyers is causing pressure. And just the value of money. You see these sports contracts, $500 million for NFL players. The jury views the value of money as astronomical. So I think that also plays into these awards being over the top. Texas leads the nation thermonuclear. I think California is second. But those are the issues that we're facing, and it's capacity issues. Do we have reinsurance? And it used to be, how much is the rate increase going to be? Now we just want to make sure we have capacity to even offer the quote. Tough market, exciting market, opportunity market. When you have the market like it is now, it presents opportunity for new production and new clientele.
Let's dig into something real quick, because there's a word that you guys have thrown about. Some folks may not know what that is, but explain the reinsurance process. What does that mean? And I realize y'all's business is unique, because a lot of times your severity of claims can be astronomical. I mean, it makes the news when something goes wrong. I mean, obviously, you know, somebody merges into traffic and hits a big crane. It's, you know, that's never fun for anybody, but some of it is catastrophic claims. Explain the reinsurance component, just if somebody's hearing that and they may not be familiar with that concept.
You'll see an insurance company like AIG or some major insurance companies, and they don't want to take the entire risk entirely. So they actually go and buy reinsurance. It's insurance to insure the insurance company. And so when the reinsurance tightens, that means that we call it the fronting company or the lead company has to raise rates, because the reinsurer is raising rates. And the reinsurer, if you have $1 million limit, the reinsurer may have 900,000 of that $1 million limit. So they're on the hook to fund the $900,000 loss. Let me clarify, thermonuclear is any verdict over $20 million. It used to be called nuclear, $10 million. Now it's thermonuclear, $20 million. We're seeing a high frequency of thermonuclear.
Wow. I mean, with those verdicts that are coming down, I mean, does this really vary state to state, just depending on kind of what the legal framework is, or you know, what torts, what kind of tort reform is in that state? Are there some states where you're like, gosh, I wish we were in this state and not that state?
Well, not only states, it's the jurisdiction inside the state. In Texas, you may have a more adverse verdict in South Texas than you would in Fort Worth, Texas. So it depends on the state and also the venues inside the state that will influence a verdict. There was just a verdict here in Dallas, Texas of $865 million. I say a verdict. It was the jury awarded $865 million. And that was something that happened maybe 3 months ago here. Florida, California, and Texas leads the nation in large verdicts.
Yeah, the statute structure here in Texas has been one that we tend to fight plaintiff counsel on the other side of our claims constantly, you know, opportunistic plaintiffs looking for, you know, large payouts. And so Texas has been in that battle where traditionally you would think, okay, well, if you cross into Louisiana, you've got to deal with this, or New Mexico, you've got to deal with this. And Texas was always this idea of a pro-business type state. But, you know, over the years, Texas has turned into kind of a battleground state on these issues. And so there's been some changes recently that we're hopeful that the Texas legislature has, passed some laws that should help with the thermonuclear verdicts. But, you know, we really haven't seen that manifest quite yet. The dockets have been so backed up from COVID and not hearing cases. So some of that case law really hasn't been flushed through the court system yet. And so the insurance carriers are still hesitant. Yeah, we're hopeful that Texas can, you know, we can see some of these improvements where we can help with this hard market that we're in.
But I overheard you guys actually at a recent event that we had that y'all were talking about. There's insurance companies that are coming out now and they're saying, well, we won't give you $5 million or we won't give you $10 million. So you're now having to go to two or three markets to get right. The contractual limit that you're needing.
So instead of one insurance company saying, okay, well, we'll give this crane and rigging company $10 million in excess, or we'll give this crane and rigging company $5 million. We'll have to we'll bring in multiple carriers and add them on top of each other to build a tower with multiple carriers.
Is there an argument about who's first?
Oh yeah. It's yeah. That first layer is really hard. And then we have found recently that the second layer is equally as hard. So where you could used to have one insurance company give a full $5 million, now that's turned into two insurance carriers. So one will take the first three, a completely different one will take the next two. And then to get to 10, there might be another two or three. So
And everybody probably wants that last spot.
Yeah. Nobody wants the first and second spot. Everybody wants the last spot. The furthest up the chain they can get, the more they like that. So
yeah, we just did a renewal recently where a client had $15 million and took five layers of insurance companies. So it used to be where you can get the first 10 pretty easy. Now carriers will put up two and then three and then build up. So if you had $50 million in limits 3 years ago, they're probably paring that down quite a bit just because capacity issues. And back to your what state is state, it also depends on what state, how they view the liability issue. On the West Coast, it's more joint and several, where if you have 1% negligence, you can be held the entire responsibility of the claim.
Wow.
In Texas, 51% will bar recovery. So it's called a comparative negligence state. So it depends on what type of the liability and the statutes, depending on how much exposure you have in that particular state. Texas is very favorable. It's called a comparative negligence state. Not so much on West Coast. So carriers are now looking at insurance companies. Where do we write our insurance? We have favorable tort as far as how they view the negligence and negligence participation of an insured.
And I'm sure you're with all this change. I mean, we're really spending, you know, a lot of the time talking about the insurance side, but I'm assuming the contract side's changing as well. I mean, what these insurance or what the contractors are having to agree to get work, I would be willing to bet is not staying the same. I mean, what are you seeing on that side of it? Because that is something that you guys do that's pretty different is you really get embedded in these contracts and make sure that the insurance dollar the client is spending actually does adhere to the contract.
And we just had a contractual law seminar here at Coverica. It's a big deal. 10 years ago, it was all handshakes and phone calls. Now every client we have, every job comes with a contract. It could be a subcontract agreement. It's 49, 50 pages, 60 pages. They're very arduous. We go in review. We're not lawyers. We don't give legal advice, but we do review scope of work, some insurance requirements, the indemnity, and make suggestions. And again, two laws were passed in Texas, pretty critical. 2012 was the Texas Anti-Indemnity Act that favors subcontractors. And the second bill was House Bill 19 that addresses the lawsuit abuse in Texas. We're waiting for that to filter through to see what kind of effect it will have. The rubber meets the road, you know, anything over the road, trucking, cranes, et cetera. So, yep, Texas first state in the country to address lawsuit abuse. In 2021, it went into effect September. So we'll see what happens with that.
It's kind of ironic that a lot of the subcontract agreements, the master service agreements, are asking for more and more umbrella limit. So where maybe 10, 15 years ago, they would say, we only need five, you know, and then 5 years ago, we need 10. And then now we want 15. But at a time when there's less and less capacity, as we were saying, carriers aren't wanting to give it up.
Right.
So there's kind of an inverse relationship there. And that's creating a lot of the issues, you know, and finding the carriers that are willing to jump into the stack.
Gotcha. Yeah. And, you know, 5 years ago, we'd take out a client renewal as a back slapping lunch. Talk about the kids. Now you walk into a client, there might be seven or eight of their people, CFO, COO, the owner, the president, safety director, GMs, because of the attention focused on the insurance premiums right now. So the back slap, let's go to lunch days are probably still there, but most of the time it's not.
Right.
You're addressing seven or eight folks in a conference room.
From a client's perspective, I mean, what percentage of cost do you think is insurance on the expense side?
Oh, man. 4 years ago, maybe two or three. Now it could be up to 10%.
Wow.
Yeah, it's a big, if you look at the P&L, it's going to be labor. It's going to be the maintenance for their equipment. And right up there is the insurance cost. And we're seeing a heavy emphasis on what can we do to control. It's a expense item that's popping up, and it's really being looked at.
So something, I mean, with all this legislation, I wouldn't have imagined the beginning of your career, you were thinking that you would be involved legislatively. How did that happen? I mean, all of a sudden you hear of an insurance guy is now kind of lobbying and talking to states and I mean, what prompted that? This is something me and you haven't actually talked much about. Mm. I knew you were involved, and then it was like, oh, he's way involved.
We got involved, Gene and myself, through the Texas Crane Owners Association. Texas Crane Owners Association is a group of Texas crane owners. It's the largest in the country as far as a state coalition of crane owners. And the TCOA hired lobbyists in Austin that goes and wines and dines the House members and the Senate members about passing legislation that affects the crane industry.
Hmm.
That's how the anti-indemnity passage happened in 2012. Very favorable, and it equaled out the indemnity responsibilities for our subcontractors. Two, House Bill 19 was in coordination with Texas Crane Owners Association, the Texas Trucking Association,
Texas Contractors Association.
Yeah, yep. It was all very instrumental in getting that House bill done. It was awesome because you have a huge deep pocket plaintiff. The lobbyists for the plaintiff lawyers is huge, well funded. So that was a victory for the subcontractors on getting that thing done. And we won't go into specifics on what that does, but the meat is very good. And if it goes through, filters in these lawsuits, it's going to be Texas will be a favorable place to write insurance in again.
Right. And I mean, the goal of this really is it's about getting cost containment for these projects, for construction, for development. I mean, this doesn't just go beyond, hey, let's try to get premiums down. I mean, this really does filter into what it costs to construct something.
Well, what the lobbyist wanted to know from us was like claims information,
right,
on a high level,
right,
So we understand what the user of the insurance is facing, but they also wanted to understand about the insurance carriers themselves, you know, who's staying, who's leaving the state. Like, what do these claims look like? How are they, you know, adversely affecting not only the heavy construction and trucking market and the construction marketplace, but how is it adversely affecting us as well? So it was kind of a multifaceted approach, and those lobbyists did a great job. It passed in the first session that it was
presented.
Yeah. Where everyone was budgeting maybe three sessions, because Governor Rick Perry's medical tort reform took three. But on this effort, it was in the first session. So that was nice. A little bit of a head start, hopefully to some relief.
Right. Yeah. I mean, where does this go over the next 5 years? I mean, this is what we're seeing now seems unprecedented. And you just kind of look forward and where are we going with all this?
Well, it has to start, I think, in the legislature. I mean, it has to be laws passed to, you know, I think the plaintiff lawyers spent $3.5 billion last year on advertising. Huge amount. Plaintiff lawyers are well-funded through third-party litigation, where they have investors putting up money for a return for a high verdict.
So there's VC money getting involved.
Private equity money, VC money, they're funding that. And one of the things that Texas did, it says you cannot use third-party funding lawyers. You can't use third-party litigation funding. The other 49 states haven't addressed that. So, you know, going forward, it's got to be legislative. And Gene and myself are very good about teaching our clients about the OSHA regulations and what defenses does a crane company have when you go against a well-funded plaintiff lawyer. And it's regulations that, you know, the crane operator sitting in a cab, you know, the statistics say only about 21% of the claims are from the actual crane operator. The other 79 are from 5, 6, 7, 8 other entities that are on the job site. So we educate our crane people, the claims people, our crane clients. Let's go to these regulations and use them in defense and keeping these verdicts down.
Do you guys see anything changing kind of in the construction industry that, you know, maybe from an equipment standpoint or from a practice standpoint that might be on the horizon over the next 5 years? I mean, not to get too techie, but is there an AI in this? Is there a, you know, I mean, are crane companies coming out with more and more technology to maybe mitigate the risk?
By all means, AI is playing a big part. There's always been measurements on the incident rate, how many picks and how many claims we have. But the technology hasn't measured the non-accidental data. How many successful picks did we make without an incident? And so once you measure the non-incident versus the incident, I think you get a better grasp. The U.S. is far behind the U.K. in technology, in AI. The U.K. is the leader. The U.S. is behind, but it has to go that route because you can't premium your way out of this market. You can only charge so much premium. So technology is going to play a huge part, especially recording the non-accidental data and also the accidental data.
You know, it's funny you mentioned the technology side. I read an article just recently. So speaking of cyber liability, you would never think a heavy construction customer would have issues with this. But in Europe, there are cyber criminals that have taken control of construction cranes on job sites.
Wow.
Because of the interface of the technology increasing in the cranes and them being able to intercept it. And so this is like a whole new conversation that we're having to have of, okay, well, stateside, what does that interface look like in our heavy machinery with connections to the internet, connections to, you know, susceptible systems that someone could infiltrate and gain advantage by. Technology is a huge piece, but it's kind of bringing along all of the other things that maybe some other industries have dealt with for years And now we're seeing it in the heavy construction marketplace as well. At least there's a documented case in Europe. So we haven't seen anything stateside, but, you know, maybe a matter of time. I don't know.
Yeah. And it could be a bad actor just, you know, wanting to cause chaos on a job site.
Sure.
Or it could just be, hey, we're going to lock up all your equipment.
Yep.
And good luck turning it on.
Yeah, exactly.
Until you pay us.
Like a ransomware type thing. Who would think that, you know, that could be applicable on a job site? But that I don't know. We're having to think about this. So things are absolutely changing on that side of the fence as the equipment becomes smarter, you know, more technologically advanced. The operator's still in the cab, but you know, a lot of things are controlled by computer these days. So it's kind of an interesting thought and a different exposure that you know you haven't seen traditionally.
In cranes, talking about crane market. A $2 million crane 5 years ago was expensive. We're seeing $7, $8, $9 million cranes, the new crane costs. So the value of this equipment is off the charts, and it's becoming an issue for an insurance company to insure a $9 million crane. And we're seeing more of that than not.
What's driving up the cost on the manufacturing side?
A lot of it is increased cost materials. The latest, greatest, if you go to ConExpo or Bauma, which is ConExpo on steroids in Germany, they're bringing out the latest and greatest. And every manufacturer wants to build a bigger machine, extra lifting capacity. Take three cranes before, you can do it with one crane. And to take out a large crane on a job site requires tons of trucking and trailers to move that boom out to a job site. So it's more costly. It's increasing the cost of jobs. Let's face it, you know, our clientele wants the biggest and best.
Yeah. Now, something I have noticed with technology that really has changed kind of your landscape is it seems like when there is a claim, it looks more like an episode of CSI than it did an episode of Matlock. The accident reconstruction that can be done. I mean, can y'all talk for a second about what you're seeing, like that's different than what you maybe have seen 10, 15 years ago?
By all means. If there is a large catastrophic accident, we call probably the best forensic accident creation specialist in the country and arguably the world. And he's got 3D scanning equipment. So he'll go out and recreate and scan the accident scene with this technology, and it's been very successful. So we're using that. It's getting the insurance companies to pay for the forensic engineering. Sometimes we have to jump through some hoops, but when you have an accident claim, you get a call on Saturday night. It's not, hey, how's the family? It's a bad thing. And so you have an action plan. We get our forensic expert. We call our defense counsel, and he'll send out his investigative team. We've had things, we've gone to four parts of the country, and they get there within 6 hours to get critical data early on and secure the accident scene. So probably the 3D scanning equipment would be a thing that that we're seeing used quite often.
Yeah.
And training the heavy construction personnel on, in the event of a catastrophe, here's what you need to do. Here's what you need to say or not say. You know, we need to let, you know, the catastrophe engineers and the attorneys come in and look at this issue. Things that we do could hinder that. Don't put your foot in your mouth, if you will. Get the operator out of there and make sure that he's safe and healthy and everything else. And then, you know, let the professionals take over, because the thermonuclear verdicts are becoming more and more of a problem. So it's really come to that progression.
I mean, is it really in an accident like that? Is it really like, let's make sure everyone's safe. Don't touch anything. I mean, is it really that kind of advice?
You know, I always said,
and keep them off the camera.
Yeah, I always said cranes and planes make headlines. So we had a client doing one of the hurricanes back in, I don't know, 2012 or 13, and we saw our, it was a tower crane, and we saw the boom swinging back and forth on CNN, and we're going, that's our client. We had a case where a client had a personnel boom lift booming inside to do painting in the kingdom back when the kingdom was here. And the personnel bucket hit the top of the roof and the person fell to his death. And I was watching ESPN and they switched over to my crane client. It had the name all over the cab and boom. And I go, oh my gosh. So we find out about this stuff too by news. And when you have a bad accident, you also want to go probably the PR route to contain what you see in the news and on TV, because they'll dig up 15 years of OSHA violations and they'll publicize it as the worst crane company out there. So we have to contain as much as we can from the PR standpoint.
I mean, digging into the just, you know, this is the last thing I'll ask about the tech side of it, but it seems like driver training has really moved into the future. Operator training has really moved into the future. Have y'all had a chance to kind of sit in the cab virtually, sit in the cab and do some of those things, or have you seen it, or what's going on the training side?
Well, Triple C certified operators is, you know, really more of a standard, where years ago you didn't necessarily have to be a certified operator. So there's that. The way that they train the operators, you know, practically with, you know, on-site training or virtual training, you know, that's all moved into the, you know, into this century, if you will. I've not done a lot of that training myself, but, you know, I know that our customers, you know, talk about that and all their operators having to get recertified and these types of things. So,
well, I think OSHA also, maybe 2 years ago, they put more of the onus on our clients because now they're responsible for the evaluation process of their operators. So the operators go get certified from an accredited certification company. And now OSHA comes back and says, well, we're going to take it a step further. We're going to make the employer evaluate the quality of the operator, and it's on you. It's your responsibility to make sure the operator can operate this particular type of crane. And so now the owners, crane owners, have a responsibility to evaluate their own operators. So it put more of an onus on the crane company to make sure they are evaluating.
I hear a lot of things that could be subject to discovery in a lawsuit of, you know, when was that equipment calibrated? When was he last trained? When was he last certified? I mean, this is now, I mean, it just seems like the crane and rigging companies themselves.
When was the crane itself last inspected and passed?
Yeah.
You know, is its own inspection out of date? You know, that could be a big part of a discovery process as well.
You evaluate an operator on a 200-ton crane and he's on a 300-ton crane, he has an accident. What did you evaluate the potential of the operator being on a 300-ton crane? And there's a lot of stuff goes into it. Also, the safety manuals, employee handbooks. Gosh, the plaintiff lawyers love to read those and make sure you're following per word. And if not, they exploit that. So it's a huge, huge problem when you get very elaborate on putting your safety manual together, employee handbook.
Yeah, I can see that. So not to get too doom and gloom on everything, but I mean, what excites you, you know, just kind of changing gears for a second, what excites you over the next, you know, couple of years? What are you seeing that's, hey, there's some hope, there's some cool stuff coming. I mean, I'm sure these companies are not operating the same way they were 30 years ago, 40 years ago.
No, they're making strides, you know, keeping up with the times, if you will. But the people are still the same type of people. And honestly, that's what excites me. You know, as technology and, you know, changes and increases and, you know, the equipment becomes more complex and larger and the jobs become larger and more diverse. You know, the people that run the cranes and the the people that own these companies are still like, they're just awesome people to work with. I mean, let's face it, insurance is kind of a drag. It's not everyone's favorite thing that they buy, and we understand that. But as the people that are representing the insurance side of their expenses on their P&L, we sure like the people in the industry. They're just great, great folks. So yeah, I don't know. It's things change, but I still just love dealing with, you know, these types of folks. So I don't see that changing anytime soon.
You know, Jim and myself talk quite a bit. We're not out there selling insurance. We're out there educating and partnering up with our clients. So we're bringing information like what's happening down in Austin, what's happening at the legislature, what bills are being passed. Let's talk about OSHA B30. Let's talk about OSHA B93. You know, we get into the regulatory part too to help our clientele to, you know, just defend against these frivolous lawsuits that come. And right now, it's everything that's over the road. You know, driver training's huge. We have a program partner that mandates driving safety programs. You have to attend or you don't get insurance. And it's becoming a big deal. Telematics, cameras, dash cameras, side cameras, 5 years ago, kind of talked about. Now we're having partnered carriers mandate the installation of camera telematics. It's gotten to that point because we typically get an accident, it's all two completely different stories. And now you get video, front-facing dash or side video, even license plates, and it tells a story. So you send the video to the plaintiff lawyer, and you may not hear back. You know, so that's what's changing. That's what's exciting. And we're more educational people. I mean, yeah, insurance is our gig, but, you know, it's telling our clients what they may not be hearing anywhere else.
Right. And that's, I mean, I've been in the industry for 20 years, and it seemed like, you know, had a renewal, go out on new business, you know, looking at a new account, you'd work with them on kind of add changes, removing some billing issues and things like that. But it actually seems like you're almost part of the team now inside some of these companies, inside some of your clients. And I mean, this is something Mike, our founder, he's even found himself in, is, you know, they're looking at, perpetuation of the company. And all of a sudden they're asking him what are his thoughts on it. Has nothing to do with insurance at all. But they're almost going to you as a, almost like a peer or like a board member. And maybe that's because the expense has gone from 1% to 2% to 10%.
I think that it's funny. I've always kind of made fun of this. We get calls from clients that have an ache in the back of their knee. And I said, is this crane insurance? Well, no, we call you for everything, Ron. So I go, wow, okay, cool. But you're right. We are an extension, probably more of the risk management consulting side for our clientele. And because they're paying a lot of money for their insurance, they will call us for things other than crane insurance.
Well, and it's a testament of how long we've been nuanced in this industry type as well. You started many years ago, and I've been in here 15. And this is really the industry that we serve. You know, if somebody were to call me and say, hey, can you help me with risk and insurance on my restaurant and bar. I'd say, I can't, but somebody else probably could, and I'll get you to that person. But, you know, dealing with a crane or heavy construction, lifting something, you know, or shipping something or trucking something. I mean, that's the world that we live and die in every day. So, you know, we actually, to your point about being ingrained, it's the way it should be. You know, that's actually a really good thing because, you know, open lines of communication with risk that's pretty severe. We don't necessarily have a regularity issue. We have a severity issue.
Right.
When the claims happen, they're big. So being ingrained in that level within the organizations that we serve is great because it speeds things up, that response. When the rubber meets the road and you have to respond quickly, you know, that helps. And so, I guess that's kind of the only way we know how to do it, really.
We do get calls from other types of businesses. And my first question is, does it have an outrigger's pad or a boom? And they're going, well, no, we're a restaurant. I go, well, I said, I'm pretty specialized in the heavy iron part of this thing, but we can't refer you to somebody else. It's like Gene said, that's our world. You get outside of the heavy iron, and I couldn't tell you anything about how to underwrite and sell it. But if it's got an outrigger's pad or boom attached, we're pretty good about addressing that exposure.
And that's the thing. I mean, to that client, you almost have to, or to that company calling in, it's like, man, we need to find you a Ron and a Gene in the restaurant world, because that's just not where I live.
Yeah, sure.
You know, and I mean, unless it's got, you know, something to do with a crane or a boom or some kind of gantry system, it's just, you're not as well versed in it. And that's okay. I mean, maybe that's a good part of your career, that you're able to say no to things and you can focus. Because what's interesting about you guys specifically, what I've noticed is y'all don't have 500 clients. You've got a couple of dozen really big ones. And these are clients that, you know, you're not going to have one year and not the next. I mean, they're with us for a while. They're with us sometimes decades. And, you know, I think that just goes to attest to what you guys provide. And ear to the ground is not a strong enough phrase to say what you guys are in this industry. But, I think it's evident. And as we were talking, you know, the accident reconstruction thing, maintenance, training. Guys, I got to be honest, I'm hearing future guests on the podcast here. So maybe we can get some of those folks on mic and dig into some of those topics. So that said, just, you know, want to kind of shift gears maybe to something a little more fun, a little more personal, just so people can kind of get to know y'all. What gets you up in the morning? What's motivation for you to keep doing this?
I've got four kids. And they're all under nine. No, I joke. Coming out of the construction background and moving into the insurance industry, it's the people and the industry at large. That's my personality. These are the people that I like, and I love working with them. I mentioned it a little while ago. I really like being a subject matter expert in this particular field. Serving these types of clients that have big industrial risk, and it's fun, you know, it's great. I honestly know that our team, you know, makes a difference. We have a high level of give a damn, right? That's the whole team does, and so it's fun to work in that environment. It really is. And so I would say that's, you know, the reason why I would, you know, jump on it, you know, every day.
Perfect. Ron, what say you?
Yeah, I wake up, I make sure that the mortgage is caught up. Then I go to work. Our crane clients, they get up early. They get up early, 4 o'clock, 4:30. And insurance people don't get up at 4:30. But I'll get phone calls at 6:30 or 7 o'clock in the morning, and I'm rushing to get my first cup of coffee. So they sometimes get me up. But it's the people in this business. We love them. We both connect so well with our clientele. And we know what to expect. I mean, we hardly ever get surprised. And it's the people, Leaf, that I think gets me motivated every day. It's fun. You know, somebody said if it's not fun, it's call work. And if it's fun, it may not be call work. And I say it's a lot of fun. So
I don't know, like writing an insurance policy for like a clothing boutique, Ron, I'd have called it quits a long time ago. So, you know, but when you write a policy for a giant crane, you know, and all the
there's
bravado,
something cool about it.
All the bravado that goes along with that and the people that operate it. I mean, it's a riot, you know, it's fun. So
we have a client that has cranes on plexi barges on a lake. And they know it's my client. And I've gotten 9 phone calls from different people. Do you have insurance on those cranes, on those barges? And I said, I do, and you're the ninth person to ask me that question. So cranes are very visible. You know, I'll get a call and say, I just saw one of your clients making a pick over here, and it's fun. I mean, they connect you with this industry, and cranes are very visible, and if there is an incident, it's usually on the news, and we don't like that. So one other thing, in 1997, we had a famous NFL player. Our client was moving a tree, and the rigging broke, and the boom fell into the house.
Oh.
And the newspaper played, if you're having a bad day, see this picture for days. And I said, when are they going to stop showing? And it had the name of the crane company, you know, on the cab. And I said, when are they going to stop showing this picture?
Right.
And they kept showing it, and they finally went away. And then the anniversary of the incident, they showed it again.
Oh,
and
my gosh.
So we're going, please go chase somebody else down. So yeah, it's things like that that kind of stick in your mind.
I would be venture, it'd be a safe bet to say you guys never have the same day. I mean, it's something different every day. Ron, I've seen some of your clients, cranes on, you know, movies, Fear Factor, MTV shows. I mean, what are some phone calls, Gene? You've probably gotten some of these of things that your client was saying, hey, man, do we have insurance for this?
Well, this kind of goes back to being part of the team. I'll say it this way. The client, we build a lot of trust, right? And there's a long relationship normally. And then, you know, maybe the owner of the company and their safety director will be talking to you openly and honestly. And then there's always a joke of, wait. No, he's on the insurance side. You should shut up. You know, like that type of deal where... you didn't hear that, Gene, right? We got this. So, you know, gosh, any number of things. Offhand, I'm not really sure, but certainly every day there's always something different. Lifting wild things to just more conventional things. You know, it's, hey, we lifted up a military helicopter today with a picture of missiles and guns and all sorts of stuff.
Right.
And we were at, you know, in Fort Hood or whatever Fort Hood's called now, but to just your normal stuff. But it's, yeah, every day is different. That's for sure.
Yeah. I mean, as an example, I just saw a YouTube video where a crane was hanging a platform with a $3.5 million Ferrari loading into the side of a commercial building.
Oh yeah.
On probably what was floor 20.
Oh my. Yeah.
And, you know, and it's funny because you look at those videos and you're just like, please don't be ours. Please don't be ours. Please don't be ours.
Yeah. Or some of the helicopter picks are always really wild, you know, where they're lifting something onto a building via an aircraft.
Right.
You know, and I know those are critical picks. Right. And I know that, you know, some of our customers have done that even recently and they spend, you know, months, if not a year, planning that in coordination with their teams and with us. And that's always a really cool project to be a part of because it's one of those one-off things that's just like, if it does go wrong, you know, there's severe implications. So it's kind of neat to work on those as well.
When you also mentioned Fear Factor and Terminator, we did have a client that did stunt work for Burbank Studios and anything around that Burbank area. So the underwriter for this account went to watch Terminator 2. And I get a phone call the next day saying, your client is chasing down fast-running trains and crashing into it, and it showed the name of the crane company on the boom in Terminator. And she goes, and we're writing this stuff? And I go, yeah. And about 5 years before that, there was something called bungee jumping. So our crane guys and ladies were renting their cranes out for bungee jumping. There was an unfortunate incident where there was a couple of fatalities. And since the bungee jumping came to play, there is now a stunning exclusion in the liability policies.
Oh, my gosh.
So they never addressed that before. So the underwriter for this particular crane company goes, you know, we're not paying for any coverage because it's stunning. And So we had to address that contractually with the studios to we can get with legal to hopefully get the supporting hold harmless agreement from the studios back to our client.
That's wild. Yeah, it was wild to see. Like, I remember back in the day, we did do these big certificate stuffing parties, and all of a sudden you look down and it says, you know, 21st Century Movie Studios or Fox Entertainment or something like that. And it just goes to show how commonplace cranes are and this construction equipment is in the industry or out there in the world. And I mean, there may be a little bit of nostalgia to it too. I mean, I think we all probably played with Tonka trucks as kids.
Of course.
You know, it might still have a couple around the house on a shelf or something. So it's very cool what you guys do. It's also probably one of those things, if you're on a plane and you don't want to talk to the person next to you and they say, what do? You say, I'm in insurance. But if it looks like somebody that might be interesting, you say, you know, hey, you ever turn on the news, you ever see a crane? That's probably one of, you know, hopefully that might be or might not be one of my clients. So,
yeah, insurance, you know, I was single. I was on a dance floor and the lady goes, what do for a living? I said, I sell insurance. And she walked off the dance floor. Now if I'm married, but if I was single and I say I do crane insurance, she'd still be dancing with me. So it does separate when you specify crane insurance versus insurance.
Right.
Yeah. Talking with, you know, like my kids are on sports teams and mm-hmm. such, and we get to know the other families on the sports teams. Oh, well, what do you do? Oh, what do you do? You know, and, you know, if I just say, I'm in insurance, like, oh, cool story. Next, you know,
but, yeah.
Oh, we insure cranes, you know. It's always funny, like, oh, do you insure the cranes that are on the lake and on this and that? Yeah, we do. Whoa, that's cool. Has anyone ever fallen over? Yeah, all the time, unfortunately. So,
yeah,
it's always interesting. And yeah, that's why it's pretty fun and to be motivated every day because you never know what you're going to get.
Well, hey, just to bring this home, something we do on a couple of podcasts that we're on or that we take part of is, a lot of folks that listen, they're always looking for recommendations. I mean, what are things that are going on in the industry? What are maybe books you've read, videos you've watched, things you've listened to? Maybe there's some recent cases you think somebody might need to look into. And I realize some of those things may turn into their own episode, but you know, could you leave us with recommendations from Gene and Ron?
Yeah, I think recommendations. We're all going telematic. And to be familiar with the telematics available, if you're in a crane company, and we do heavy haul and we do concrete pumping. But on the crane side, it's learning the telematics. They call us for recent case law. We may get a denial or disclaimer from the insurance company. We research case law, present it back that we feel that it should not be denied. And as far as YouTube videos, Leif, if you've ever gone to YouTube and type in video of tower crane operators. Now, this is a cool videos. You're setting up 300 feet in the air. And you get the best view in the world. And it might be a cloudy day. It might be a windy day. But just watch the videos of the tower crane operators. Pretty, pretty cool. And how do they get up there? They climb. So you better not be out at 2 o'clock the morning before drinking alcohol when you got to climb 300 feet up to the tower crane cab.
Yeah, to dovetail on the telematics, it's something that we have opinions on where the things go and what they're videoing and these things. As far as your point about case law, something to look into that certainly. Here in Texas, House Bill 19, and what that's going to manifest into, and how telematics might play a part in that. A whole nother episode, I'm sure, but that's a big piece of the puzzle, I think, right now in our current marketplace for risk evaluation. You know, not only are the traditional insurance carriers really looking at that hard, but so is the captive insurance marketplace. So I think it's going to be a part of our lives as things move forward. So,
yeah, we've been talking about the traditional way to buy insurance, but there's also the non-traditional way. And it's a whole other episode of The Captive. And The Captive is going to be a big piece of going forward because it's going to be an alternative to the traditional. And when the traditional is kind of broke, our clients are wanting to know all options possible. So we have entertained the captive marketplace, and there's going to be a place going forward for captives.
Very cool. Look forward to that in a future episode. So with that said, let's go ahead and just wrap this up. Just wanted to thank our listeners for listening today's episode of Crane Talk. If you liked what you heard, if you have a question or a suggestion, you can drop us an email at cranetalk@coverica.com. And finally, if you like the podcast, please subscribe and leave us a review. Thank you so much and have a great day.